Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
G, take me away.
Welcome to another episode of the Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week is part one of a two-parter with a master entrepreneur, Mr. Cosmo Jones. Now, Cosmo started off as a child actor on NBC, and he soon went on to become quite the entrepreneur, starting several businesses, so many I've actually lost track. So I hope this is inspiring because it was for me. And it's going to be continued next week. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a filmmaker, musician, podcaster, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments because they have an app that will make your life simpler. As always, check out the show notes for more information. Subscribe to the show, email us, leave a review, all that stuff. But most of all, enjoy. Okay, Cosmo, we haven't done many of these drinking podcasts, but this will be a drinking episode.
Excellent.
Can we get a cheers
for the audience? That was the sound of two beers clicking together.
Exactly. We've got a lot to get to. You've done a lot of amazing things. You own a 40,000 square foot rehearsal space in Los Angeles. You've started many businesses. But in researching you, I found that you were, as a child actor on NBC on a sitcom.
That is a true statement.
What? All right. First of all, how did that happen? How did you end up on TV as a child?
It all started with Eric Axine, my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say we were about 7 years old.
You were in Los Angeles at the time?
Orange County.
Okay.
Very close,
mm-hmm.
but still 40 minutes away. And that'll be important in a second. Eric got into this acting class for the summer,
mm-hmm.
and he was going to be like out almost every day. And I was thinking, well, that sucks. My best friend's going to be gone all summer. And then he's like, well, why don't you just do the class? And so I ended up doing the class. I didn't care about acting, didn't want to be an actor. I was just goofing around with my
friend. Just wanted to hang out with Eric. How old were you at the time?
So about seven.
Oh, wow.
So it was the Gene Halliburton School of Acting.
I've actually heard of that.
I think it's still around, even though she isn't. But the promise was, at the end of the class, they had an agent from the Mary Grady Agency, which is also still around. Mary is not. that would come. They would do headshots. And they would send stuff out for auditions.
Wow.
And so, I mean, I'm seven. I don't even really know what's going on. Someone came over with a camera to my house, took some photos. I goofed off. Never thought much about it.
But you barely been speaking English. How do you... You're memorizing lines at the time?
Oh, no. I mean, it was... I don't even remember the class, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
What I do remember is when we started to have to drive to LA for auditions.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very pre-internet and very different from how we do casting now. ironically. So they have this black and white headshot. So a lot of times my mom would drive me all the way up there and we'd wait and we'd finally go in and they'd take one look at you and we were looking for someone who's had more red in their hair, or we thought you'd look taller, even though I think it had your height. And
yeah, I will grow.
Yeah. When you're 7, your height and weight pretty much changes on a daily basis.
Right.
But then I got into a couple commercials. Like I said,
were you trying to?
Yeah, I was.
You wanted to be acting.
Well, I guess I thought I did. Yeah, at first I did.
Right.
But then the grind of auditions gets to you after a while.
Yeah.
But then I auditioned for this spectacularly crappy sitcom called His Honor, spelled H-I-Z-Z-O-N-E-R.
Wow, that's kind of ahead of the time with the Z's back then.
It really was, and it's really not wasn't as cool and cutting edge
as the spelling,
as anyone would think.
Was that the one that ended up on NBC?
That was the one that ended up on NBC. Even as a little kid, I knew that this was some truly awful writing and acting, and it got canceled. And it's really rare in the 70s for a show to be canceled and they don't just air the rest of the episodes.
Because they already filmed them.
They were all filmed.
Yeah, they already paid for it. It was that bad?
It was awful. Yeah, it was better for the network to put in a rerun of something else,
right,
than to air this show that nobody, was including myself, wanted to watch.
Was there a star attached to it?
The only person of note, and it's going to be a deep dig, was David Huddleston, who went on to play, he played a bunch of roles. He was like a character actor, and this was probably one of the few like lead roles he had, but he was the older Lebowski in The Big Lebowski. So okay. He's the one that our hero Jeff Lebowski, mm-hmm, got confused with.
Right.
He's the millionaire, mm-hmm, Jeffrey Lebowski.
That was him.
Yeah, that was David Huddleston. He was the only person of note. He played the mayor in His Honor, so you can imagine he was first on the call sheet.
So, but you started acting just to be with your friend Eric,
just to hang out with Eric, and just for the same reasons I stopped doing it, because after that one sitcom experience, I had to stay up in LA, and I was going to school on the set. And so then I was missing all my friends again.
Right.
And I'm just like, and the drive and everything else. And I, as I said from the beginning, I didn't really care all that much about,
yeah,
acting. No, I had no desire to do it. But this is before I discovered music. So it was, you know, something to do. I'd always liked creative things.
So it kind of, the opportunity kind of came to you easily. Like, you did the class and you liked the class enough, but acting didn't really appeal to you that much.
No, I think Eric was more excited about it than I was, but sadly, Eric didn't get any calls for a single audition for anything.
Did he hate you for that?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I just saw him. He came into New York a couple weeks ago.
You're still friends?
Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah. So did you realize at the time that it was kind of a big deal to be on NBC?
Yeah, by then I would have been 9, 10.
Okay, so after the class, you were 7, and
yeah, it was
took
the
a
summer
while.
Of 7, and then I was auditioning, and then, you know, I was on a laundry detergent commercial, I was on a fast food commercial, couldn't even tell you what the brands were, or if they were on anymore.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents think of this? I mean, they're the ones driving you around to all these.
One part they liked is I made enough money on the sitcom that it paid for my high school. My private high school.
Okay, yeah.
So, at least my parents didn't, like, spend the money on frivolous things, like, I don't know.
Themselves.
Those greedy bastards.
Were they concerned for you? Because all of a sudden you're not in a school with other kids, and you're basically in school on set, living this strange life.
Yeah. No, they were all right with it.
Did they have to be with you on set?
Not all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. So your mom and your dad?
Well, they would trade off. It was convenient because my dad owned a lumberyard in Montebello. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it was during the week, it wasn't really a big deal for him to come get me.
What would they do while you're on set?
Sit.
Just sit around.
Yeah, with no iPads, no iPhones, no VR goggles.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, I think they actually had to... do you recall magazines?
I remember magazines.
I think my parents might have actually read one before.
Wow, that's kind of a big sacrifice for them too, because while they're sitting on set, they can't be working and they can't be living their life.
That's true, but let's face it, my mom never really worked.
She didn't work?
She seemed to be busy as hell and had things that she would refer to as jobs, but I classify a job as something that pays you money.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, yeah. What about raising kids? That's...
Yeah.
Was she doing that or no?
As best she could.
Right.
In her own special way.
Uh-huh. Brothers and sisters?
Yes. One of each.
One of each.
Collect them all.
And are you the middle?
I'm the baby, but we're all 10 years apart.
10 years apart?
Yes, and we all have different dads. And they all died under mysterious circumstances.
Each and every one of them?
Each and every one of them.
While they're married to the same mother?
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a very obvious suspect here.
Yeah, you and me both.
Really?
No, my dad died of natural causes. But my sister's dad, that was a whole weird mess up.
While he was married to your mom?
They were married, had my sister, and then almost immediately got separated or divorced or something. We don't really know the story. My mom didn't even tell my sister her dad's actual name. Like, she shuffled a couple characters around. You know, it was like close to the name, but not the exact name.
Why?
We don't know. Because she's nuttier than squirrel shit.
Your mom?
Yeah, she's a little kooky.
She's kooky, huh?
Yeah.
But didn't she want your sister's dad in your sister's life?
No, I think... I'm not... I don't mean to be just sitting here slamming my mom. This one, I think she married because he had money. He was about 27 years older than her.
Mm, yeah.
I think he had some kind of issue. He was either... loud, or I mean, it was never like an abusive relationship, but I think he drank or was verbally abusive.
What was the official cause of death?
TBD. We don't know for sure. I think it might have had something to do with alcohol, like it might have been cirrhosis or something like mm-hmm. that.
And that was her second,
that was the second one, the first one. Was my brother's dad. And
so your brother's 20 years older than you.
Yeah, we never even lived in the same house.
Right, that's interesting, because you only know each other. He was only an adult, really. He was already an adult when you were born.
Yeah, big time.
Mm-hmm. So you're brothers, but you're still kind of distant.
Yeah, you know, it's probably similar to like having an uncle.
Right. Uncle brother.
Yeah, I didn't really grow up with uncles either, so that was what I imagine having an uncle might be like.
Mm-hmm. Did your mom keep his dad from him as well?
No.
Okay, she let...
That was she bailed early on that one, and I have less details about that than I do.
But he passed away too, huh?
Yes.
What was the official cause of his death?
I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah. Does your brother know?
He probably would if mm-hmm. I asked him.
Right. But I guess, yeah, he's so removed from you. You know, did you ever meet the guy?
No.
Right.
I didn't know. I would assume they both died before I was born.
Would that be a stepfather?
For me?
Yeah. No, right?
No, because my dad and my mom had me directly.
Yeah. Right.
There was no other interference or other people or switching around or wife swapping or...
Hey, it was the 70s.
It was. Yeah.
So your dad died of natural causes.
He did. He was a good guy. He, second I turned 18, he bolted back to Arkansas to get away from my mom.
Really? So you think he just stuck around for you?
I'm pretty sure he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did you get a sense at the time of what their relationship was like?
Oh, I saw it every day. Yeah. My mom's just super tough to deal with, and is it can be just
tough in what way? Like demanding,
just exasperating, and not always truthful about things, and you know, a bit manipulative.
Yes, I know a lot of manipulative people. What would she try to manipulate from him to get him to do chores?
I know. Honestly, I think it's you know, channeling my inner unqualified psychologist. I think it's more about attention. It's just like needing people to pay attention to her,
right? Like
regardless of the truth or anything else.
Kind of like playing the victim, being passive aggressive, yeah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. She could do what my dad called crocodile tears, like on cue.
Right.
She should have been the actor.
Yeah, maybe you got the acting gene from her?
Clearly, I got the talent from her. I was not a talented actor. As you can see, my acting career went nowhere.
But you didn't have an interest in it.
No, that's true. And I was an adorable kid. But I'm telling you, once I hit 12 or 13 and things started to change, just went all downhill from there.
From what a little you've told me about your mom, it does sound like she would be someone super excited. She sounds like a stage mom. You know, she sounds like someone that would be excited to have a son that was on TV. Because that brings her attention.
It does, but then there's that conflict of, is it really bringing her attention or is it bringing me attention? And how do I balance it so that more of the attention flows to me and not to the adorable child?
Did you feel like you were competing for attention with
her? No. I mean, as a kid, I don't think I even... No, these are all things you learn afterwards. It's like, oh, that's why she was like that.
Right. Yeah, as you get older, you start to see your parents as just people.
Yeah, and you have an older sister and an older brother who have already lived through it. And so as you start to get older, they tell you more of the stories and stuff. Because people from those times, like my mom and dad, you know, they never talked about anything important.
to you?
Yeah.
Right.
It was all about the sheltering.
Right. Well, that's also the generation, too. I mean,
yeah,
you're born in the 70s. That's... so different than
and they were really old when they had me.
They were how old?
45.
Your mom was 45?
My mom, I guess my dad was 45, and that would have made my mom, I guess, 43. I think they're 2 years apart.
Wow, which is really rare in the 70s.
And that, yeah. I always said that I probably was a mistake, but they swear up and down that wasn't the case. And since I'm my dad's only child,
yeah,
you know, I would imagine they... probably did it on
boy
purpose.
They rolled the dice on that one, huh?
Yeah, they did. You gotta be careful with that old sperm.
Was your older brother, the one that's 20 years older, was he in your life when you were a kid?
Yeah, but he let's see, I guess he was in college, and he wasn't close by. Like, he was mostly either in San Diego or part of the time he's in Pennsylvania. So
can you get a sense of your mom through the relationship she had with him?
Well, you know, my brother and my mom are the ones that don't even talk to each other anymore. So, you know, my brother has like a much harsher view of her than I do. So,
well, she was probably pretty young when she had him.
Yeah, really young.
Yeah. With you, at least she had some more experience and
right.
Age and wisdom.
She'd already damaged two children, so by then she was an expert at her craft.
Yeah, how do I damage this one in a new way?
I got to top myself.
Yeah. How about your sister? Did you get a sense of what, growing up, did you get a sense of your mom through their relationship?
Yeah, my sister jokes that she gave birth to my mother, because we notice things skip a generation, and my sister now has a daughter, and it's kind of funny because she has, as a kid, she had some of the similar like qualities, air quotes, that my mom had.
Traits.
Yeah. And then my sister is just like my grandmother. I did know my grandmother on my mother's side.
Okay. Yeah.
And she's just like the nicest, like most perfect grandmother you could ever want.
Would she whisper in your ear, your mom's a little bad?
Oh my God, no. She wouldn't ever say anything bad about anybody.
She wouldn't. Mm-hmm.
No. So yeah, that's apparently it's kind of, it looks like it skips a generation. But, you know, the good news is my sister is an extraordinary parent. Mm-hmm. And so there's very little chance of my niece going full-blown mom.
Yeah.
I believe.
But we don't really think your mom murdered your dad, right?
I wouldn't say murdered, just drove him to an early grave.
Which is totally legal.
It's, yeah, you cannot go to jail for being annoying.
It's actually kind of a tradition. So you're on set, you're an actor, and you knew at the time that it was garbage while you were doing the show? Or
I had watched enough television, and let's see, I would have been...
You were around 9 when it aired?
It was 79, so I was almost... I was about 10.
Okay.
And...
Did you watch it when it aired?
Yeah, I remember. I remember I'd watch it at home, and then...
I mean, at that time, it's so different now. People see themselves on screen all the time.
Yeah.
Because films or cameras are everywhere. But at that time, it was pretty rare to see yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the coolest show and tell thing that I could do at my school, by far.
Yeah.
I remember, just sitting there watching it on the old console TV at home, and then going to school the next day. And, you know, a lot of my friends watched it too, because they knew.
Did they treat you like a celebrity?
No.
They didn't?
No, because when you're kids, you know, that... you actually act natural and you don't build up all these facades and
right.
affectations yet. So,
yeah.
No, it was really chill.
Do you remember how it felt watching it? Because, you know, there's so much, you're just on set filming it, but you're not part of the edit. You don't. And then all of a sudden you're seeing this.
No, I actually went in and did all my own editing.
Yeah.
ADR.
It was in the contract.
Yeah. Yeah. It violated every child labor law you could.
But it must have been a big deal, because you're just on set filming scene by scene, part by part. Then all of a sudden you watch this finished, color corrected, edited, mixed thing, and it looks like a finished product with a laugh track. Was it a laugh track?
Oh, there had to have been.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a live audience. I know that.
No live audience.
Yeah, it was definitely a laugh track.
Yeah.
What else do I remember?
Do you remember watching and just being like, wow, this is professional?
Yeah, I remember watching it, and I do remember thinking, for how long I was on screen, I just remember doing so much more and wondering where all that was.
Right.
You know, like you said, about not really understanding the edit of it, so.
Yeah, because you're just spending hours and days, and then all of a sudden it's a 22-minute episode, and you're in parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, that's it?
Yeah. Yeah, and technically they didn't even cut any lines or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to remember, but it felt like I did a way more work, and then I was only on screen for, you know, like 30 seconds here and 60 seconds there.
At what point did you realize it was garbage?
Well, I mean, I was an avid reader even that early on. It was one of the things I really took to when I was a kid. One of my earliest memories is realizing that I could just read to myself. I used to read out loud to my mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they got up to go do something, I'd sit there and wait for them to come back so I could continue reading.
Uh-huh.
And then it suddenly clicked that, oh, I can just read this to myself.
Yeah.
I don't have to read it out loud. And that's one of my earliest memories at like 3 or 4, something like that.
Well, that might have been like your first epiphany.
It was my first, definitely. And last.
So did you read out loud to yourself?
No, that's when I realized that I could read it and I don't have to say it. I could just read.
Right. That's like when you discovered your ego or your id or whatever it is, the other person inside of yourself.
Right. That's when I first discovered I had DID. but there was a point there which we've traveled way west of.
When did you realize the show was
junk? So I just would read the script, and I just, like, it was I knew it was supposed to be a comedy, but nothing made me laugh.
Right, but did you realize, well, I'm not used to reading screenplays, this is not a novel.
No, I'm 7, I don't, have all that reason to draw upon.
Right.
I just read it, and I just knew it wasn't good.
Yeah. It's hard, though, sometimes with screenplays. Like, have you ever read I've read a Seinfeld script before. And if you don't know the actors and the characters, it's just stuff that's happening. So sometimes that could be the case.
Absolutely. And I was probably combining it with watching how it was shot and not really understanding how things get shot and that everything's out of order. And
right.
And they, you know, they have all these fallback takes that they do. And mm-hmm. So yeah, I just, that there definitely could have just been some ignorance on my part. I just remember thinking and then seeing it on TV and just knowing that from what the other shows I'd seen on TV, mm-hmm. that this just wasn't as good.
Wasn't measuring up. Yeah. How did you feel when they canceled it?
Well, we had already shot like the whole season. And at the end of it, that's when I was just like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be gone for, you know, however long it was.
You don't want to donate.
It seemed like forever at the time.
Yeah, you don't want to donate all your time to that.
No, I was totally missing all my friends.
You're a diva at 7.
No, this by then I was 10, so I had every right to be.
Of course, yeah.
After 3 years of grueling Hollywood casting and driving and auditioning and all that. And then 11 is when I discovered music. So mm-hmm. then everything went out the window.
You discovered just the joy of listening to music?
I already had that from an early age because my sister, being 10 years older, was always playing music. And then, you know, she'd give me her records when she'd wear them out.
Right, yeah.
So I had some really scratched the fuck up... So you had Black Sabbath, Paranoid. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorites.
That's the job of an older sibling.
Oh, yeah. She gave me some good stuff. And it was all over the place, too, because sometimes it would be something my brother handed down to my sister. So it was just this odd combination of, you know, you'd flip past Black Sabbath, and then there'd be, like, Jim Croce or something like
right.
that. So you Seals and Crofts. And then... I only had an AM radio, so I listened to Mighty 690, mm-hmm. which was the disco R&B station mm-hmm. of the time. And so I think between my good buddy Kevin Burns learning guitar and steering more towards the metal side of things and mm-hmm. teaching me like Scorpions and Judas Priest and Iron Maiden songs, and then I had this other side of me that really wanted to play drums.
Were you playing an instrument at the time?
Yeah, I got my... I'm jumping ahead like you know the whole story and you don't. That's...
Right, yeah.
Maybe part of why we're here. My brother-in-law gave me mm-hmm. a guitar. Mm-hmm. I really wanted drums. My neighbors persuaded my parents that that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, well, they don't want to listen to drums.
The houses were very close together
yeah.
where I grew up. Because mm-hmm. I did, for a while, I had a snare drum and a cymbal. Afterwards, I can give you a couple pictures for your
nice.
For your records.
And you just never went back to acting? You were done with it?
No, that was it. After that whole sitcom thing, I never did another audition.
No commercials?
Nothing. No, I think I told my mom I was done, and I think they were tired of driving back and forth. Mm-hmm. And
would you get sad or disappointed when you went to an audition and didn't get the job?
I don't remember feeling that way.
Okay, so they didn't have to console you or any of that?
No, I never like had a threw a fit or anything like that. I don't think I took it real seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, compared to like when I'm trying to get an audition for a band and not getting it, you know, I remember how crushing that was. I certainly didn't feel that about acting, and it's probably because I really didn't care about it.
Right, and all the money you made from acting, they blew on private high school.
Yeah, which now I'm glad they did because I'm not a total idiot.
What was wrong with the public high school there? Not good enough.
Yeah, even back then, it wasn't
yeah
great.
Uh-huh. Because I saw in your bio that you paid for college yourself
yeah
by doing bail recovery.
I had all kinds of odd jobs.
Car repossessions.
True.
All right, you got to tell me about, so bail recovery. So basically, people go to a bail bondsman and they borrow money from a shady dude, and you have to get that bail money back.
Okay, let's take a step back. It actually started out with liability fraud investigation and workers' comp fraud investigation.
Okay.
I did do a couple car repossessions, but it was mostly following people around who made a claim with an insurance company saying they either got hurt, like a slip and fall in a supermarket, or they were working on a job and they got
So you're hurt. Investigating claims, trying to see if they're false or not?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great about that job is if I got a tour or something like that, I could totally go do that and come back.
A music tour.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, weren't you in high school at the time? How old were you when you
did this? Oh, no, no, no. This was my early 20s.
Okay. And then you did this to pay for college? Or you're just doing it odd jobs?
I did all sorts of odd jobs. Let's see. I think by the time I did... No, by the time I was doing that, I was probably 23, so I was done with with college.
Uh-huh. And you're a musician.
Yeah, that was... I went to school for music for to get a BFA in music composition.
Music composition, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, wanted to play in bands. Mm-hmm. I thought I wanted to be a session musician. That's what I thought I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. As a drummer?
No, as a guitar player.
Uh-huh.
I just... always wanted to play drums, and I would whenever I could. Like when I started playing in bands, I was always annoying whoever the drummer was by playing on his kit and stuff like that.
Yeah, and guitar session guitar player is probably the most competitive one there is. I mean,
yeah, it was brutal back then. I'm sure it's just as brutal now.
Mm-hmm.
If I could go back and tell my younger self, I would have told him to get really good at bass.
Bass, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know, guitar players and drummers were a dime a dozen.
Drummers too, huh?
Oh yeah, this place is silly with drummers.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're a musician. You were doing some touring already, and then you're just working these odd jobs.
Well, I was playing with bands. Like sometimes I ended up in some cool situations. Like one of the earliest ones, while I was still doing private investigation, all that was The Adolescents, which was a pretty classic punk band that was around even before I started playing music. They've mm-hmm. been around for a while. And, you know, they've had a lot of different members over the years. But I did a tour and a record and played a lot of local LA shows with them for about a year.
And they already kind of had a name, huh?
Yeah. I mean, they weren't raking in the money, that's for sure. But
People are coming out to their shows, and you got a taste of that.
Yeah, we could afford to do the van tours where
right.
most of the time we slept in the van.
But at that age, you're like, people are coming out to see me. There's an audience.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. So you work in these odd jobs. All right, so I can't believe they gave a 23-year-old the job of finding fraud in a claim. That seems like that would be top-level stuff.
Yeah, it's not. It's sitting around waiting and waiting, and then just trying to catch someone on video doing something.
So tell me, would you catch someone?
Yeah, this would have been on tape. We had this tape of greatest hits that my boss would take around to insurance companies that always got him psyched to hire.
What was it?
There were just different things we had managed to capture.
Like what? Tell me.
I think my favorite one was a dude. I still remember his name to this day. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll get in trouble for saying this. His name was, because it rhymed. His name was Petronio Castillo.
Nice.
And when we couldn't find where someone lived, or if they gave like an address, it was probably a relative, which happened a lot when you're committing fraud. The insurance company would set up an appointment with their doctor, which Mr. Castillo would be required to go. Uh-huh. And then from there, we would just sit in the office like we were a patient or something like that, so we could find out what he looked like. Because mm-hmm. A lot of times we didn't have a picture, or it was an old picture, and we had no information. So we'd have to figure out who he was, like, you know, and that they'd call his name for him to go in. And then we'd have to wait till he came out of the appointment and see which car he went to. And so this guy was, you know, full blown rolling around in a wheelchair saying that he had a back injury and that he, you know, he was like never going to work again, had a huge claim. So we finally pin this guy down, and we're following him, and it took two of us, because you're dealing with these big parking lots. You never know which way people are going to exit.
Right.
So for really important stuff, we'd work as a team, and we had radios. So most of the time it'd just be two. Sometimes it'd be three.
This is some spy stuff.
It's really, there'd be 2 seconds of excitement for every 200 hours of, absolutely boring nonsense. Petronio Castillo got a flat tire.
Mm-hmm.
And he had someone with him that was helping him.
Yeah.
But he just popped out of the car like it was a no thing, ran back to the trunk, got the jack, switched the tire, picked up his wheelchair, moved it out of the way to do all this, threw it back in the trunk, got in the car, got all of that on tape. And then when he gets home, he lives on the second floor of an apartment building, yeah. And we see him just, like, the other guy's not helping at all. He just grabs his wheelchair and he's literally running up the stairs because he must have been late for probably dinner.
Right.
By then. I don't know. But so that was a classic one. Another one was a guy who had a mental health claim against Xerox for like chemicals. And we caught him like almost as close as you and I are.
Yeah.
Shooting heroin.
So wait, why does that disqualify him?
Because if he's shooting heroin, he's got bigger problems than whatever his claim is.
His mental health claim?
Yeah.
But what was his claim that he...
Oh, he said that the chemicals, if I remember correctly, he had some job where he was claiming exposure to some chemical was causing all these issues. And, you know, of course, he claimed not but to maybe be on he drugs started, or anything.
Oh, he did say that he wasn't using? Because he could have said, oh, the mental issues caused me to start using. I was trying to self-medicate.
Yeah, people weren't that clever back then. Or tolerant of any kind of self-medicating.
Or I have a criminal mind.
Yeah, I think that might be.
So Castillo?
Petronio Castillo.
Petronio Castillo. He got busted. So this is a crime. Not only does he not get his money.
Yeah, these guys never ended up. It would almost always settle out of court. Like the guy with the heroin incident, he had been asking for something like $500,000.
Mm.
I think that one went to trial, and I think the lawyer tried to back down to something as low as like $500, and they wouldn't give him a penny, which was great. But they don't actually, they rarely prosecute for that stuff. Nobody really goes to jail for that.
It doesn't become a criminal charge.
No. I'd say, you know, I did that job for off and on for quite a while. And so I probably worked a minimum of 400 to 500 cases over 3 to 4 years, I'd say.
Wow.
And I probably went to trial 10 times total.
So most of the time people are telling the truth?
No, they're settling out of court. Or they didn't usually hire us if they didn't have a reason to believe fraud was at play.
Well, that makes the job more juicy.
Yeah. No, we generally when we were going out there, we knew that we'd probably catch them doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Another classic that my brother helped me with. I was on a case and I was down in San Diego, and I happened to notice that the person that we were going after had a car for sale. So I wanted to get things over with quickly. So I ran down to the payphone, called my brother and said, "Hey, will you call this number, because I got the number off the for sale sign, mm-hmm. and ask to look at the car, and I want you to, like, get under the car, ask a lot of questions, try to get her," it was a woman, mm-hmm. I don't remember her name, to just do as much stuff. She had supposedly had a back injury, couldn't bend over.
Her claim was that she hurt herself.
Yeah, hurt herself. This was a workers' comp claim, and she had a back injury, so she said that she couldn't stand for more than a few minutes at a time, couldn't bend over, you know, all these things that she couldn't do. And so my brother comes over, and, you know, he's a nut, and he just goes through the paces, just over the top.
Uh-huh.
Poor woman didn't know what hit her.
So you saw her moving around.
Oh, totally. I had everything I needed and more. I was just, if there was a way that I was trying to telepathically tell my brother, okay, we're good, just go.
Right. So people don't realize that these companies are hiring basically spies.
Sometimes. A lot of times if they have a lawyer, especially one that's, you know, one of these ambulance chasers types, mm-hmm. which, you know, stereotypes exist for a reason, they'll warn their clients to, you know, be on the lookout for this. So yeah, there would sometimes be cases where it was very difficult. We know right away that, oh, they're aware that they're being followed. And so we had ways of dealing with that too. It just usually involved sometimes up to four of us, mm-hmm. Playing a lot of, you know, just like flipping around and trying to pick people up and you know, because people who really wanted to make sure they weren't being followed, they'll do a lot of things. Like they'll drive around a block three times,
uh-huh.
or, you know, they'll suddenly make it a legal U-turn. So
once they know they're being followed.
Yeah, and then they'll just do it out of habit. That'll just be their routine. Mm-hmm. They'll just do it all the time, and then you won't know, well, did I just get burned, or...
Right.
So, yeah, that's when it would get tough, and it would take three or four of us, and one of our guys rode a motorcycle, and that was really beneficial.
Yeah. Were you ever nervous for your life?
There was only one time where I got pretty freaked out when I was in a bad area, and I wasn't paying attention. And so I'm like, I think someone might have known I was in the back of, I had this Nissan Pathfinder, and mm-hmm. the back was all blacked out. But I took my dog with me, and he was this huge, like, Shepherd Rottweiler mix.
Mm-hmm.
And it would get a little warm. And so he'd start panting, and the whole car would shake. Mm-hmm. It was also really sometimes annoyed my boss, because sometimes the footage that I would shoot had a little bit of a bounce to it. And
a dog panting in the audio?
No, there's no audio. That's the thing. Video is the only thing admissible at court, so the mic wasn't even enabled. So you're just silently getting nauseous watching the
right.
watching the video of some of this stuff, because sometimes we'd have to get pretty far away, and we had these telephoto, like, camera type lenses on this camera, and they were pretty big and they were kind of heavy, so, but they could shoot a quarter mile away if you wanted them to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were doing that, you had to be really still or have it balanced in some way, and if you're in a hurry and trying to get something, you don't have time to, like, be all prepared and everything.
Was this job more dangerous than the bail recovery? Because bail recovery sounds real
okay. That's why I had to preface this with the lead up to that.
Yeah.
So they passed a law in favor of insurance companies, which was a legitimate law, but it meant that, I forget the exact parameters, but it essentially said that you could not make a workers' comp claim 30 days after being fired or quitting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a claim, you had to make it within that 30 days, unless there was real extenuating circumstances, like it didn't present until 2 months later, and you can prove that. So that put a huge damper on the amount of fake claims that would happen.
Right.
Because a lot of the fake claims came from people losing their job, getting unemployment or not getting unemployment, whenever that would run out, or they hadn't found another job. That's when they get it in their idea. I need money. What am I going to do?
Right.
Oh, you know what? I could say that I hurt my back when I was working for these guys or whatever. So that put a huge damper in our business. So that's when we started pulling extra jobs, doing bail recovery. And that was dangerous. And as a musician, I lived in fear of breaking my fingers or...
Right. You or know, someone breaking your fingers.
Yeah. So I would say I did that for about a month. And then that just wasn't for me.
Too dangerous?
Yeah. It's...
You have any close calls?
No. My partner, Dean, did, though.
What happened?
And that's... His story about that was like, yeah, I can't do that. Yeah. He got in a situation where I don't even remember the details. I just know that he thought that he was just dealing with one person and there ended up being another person. And mm-hmm. I think it was a really close scrape for him.
Once you're involved with bail bonds, that's getting pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah, we were kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel there.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So did that lead to your... your job repossessing cars?
Because I had done the private investigation stuff even before the bail recovery thing happened. Before I worked for that investigations company, one of my odd jobs was working in a place that rented exotic cars. Once again, air quotes.
They rented exotic cars.
Yeah, we're talking like convertible Mustangs, Corvettes. Stuff like that, not like, you know, full on Lamborghinis.
Right.
They actually did have a couple Ferrari 308s. All the expensive cars were salvaged from some horrible wreck, and put back together by this dodgy Australian bodywork guy named Richard.
Uh-huh.
And they drove like absolute shit, but people who had never driven a 308 had no idea.
Right.
So they'd rent these cars and they were death traps. It was actually kind of, it was, looking back on it, I was like, oh, I can't even believe I stayed there that long.
But what was your job was repossessing?
Oh, so no, I had worked for them. No, just, I just worked there as like one of the people working in the office.
Okay.
This was when I was still in school before I started doing the investigation. It was like one of the last jobs I had while I was still in college.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they were cool about working around my college schedule. Like I could work Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday because I had college Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Right. Did you ever want to be a spy or a private investigator?
God, no. I didn't want any of these jobs.
Yeah.
This is all just like shit that just fell in my lap.
Right.
My friend Dean, who was also a guitar player, he already had the job at the investigation company. And he's like, dude, you want to come work here? And the pay was was good compared to what I was
and flexible.
Used to getting, and it was flexible, and you also got paid mileage, which you know, kind of worked in your favor.
Yeah,
even though you racked up a bunch of miles on your car. So yeah, it was,
and this is all in California.
Southern California. Yeah, they like to hire people that had no experience because after you do it for a while, you just get burnt out. So they didn't want to hire people from other companies that just had bad habits, that
right.
fell asleep or just didn't care.
Right. And you come with an open mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So because I had worked for the car rental company before, they had a couple incidents where people would abscond with cars. And and so I'd have to go mm-hmm. get the cars back.
So after all these odd jobs, what was like the first solid job where you felt like, all right, I can't work all these crappy odd jobs anymore?
Yeah, that's when I got my first and I'm really stretching the credibility here, my first design job.
Mm-hmm. Visual design.
Yeah.
Graphic design.
Yeah, yeah. Because out of necessity, I ended up, because I always loved computers. And we used computers, you know, type up all our reports and stuff. And, you know, I definitely had them through college. But when I was a kid, you know, it's like you, this was Apple II.
Right.
E times. Right. You know.
No real computer experience.
It's just the... I just loved computers, so I just remember enjoying typing up my reports. I thought it was so awesome that because my boss was totally in love with technology, like, you know, when modems came around, you know, he made sure we had modems, and he was so excited when we could submit our reports electronically. So I got to learn my way around a computer. And so then, out of necessity, I would start making flyers for my band.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had to do it.
On the computer.
So I learned Photoshop, like a really early version of Photoshop.
Photoshop like, 1.0?
No, I think it was 3.0. Uh-huh. And they had just announced a new feature called Layers.
Oh, wow. Right.
So imagine working in Photoshop without Layers, those of you who know Photoshop. And what was the other?
Did you always have an interest or a natural inclination towards visual art?
No. I had...
Usually musicians aren't visually inclined.
Is that true?
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of musicians, they're really good with audio stuff, but the visual sense is not there.
Huh. Well, I don't know. I always really appreciated... I loved album art. I mean, I remember, that's one of the things when you talk about if technology is making things better or making things worse.
Right.
I just can't even imagine not having the experience of being a kid, having your allowance money, going to the record store with enough money in your pocket to buy one, maybe two, if you didn't go nuts on the first one.
Yep.
And buy like a double album or something. And just like spending 2 hours in the record store,
yeah,
pawing through everything, maybe listening to something if they had a listening station,
yeah,
really taking in all the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'd buy albums because the artwork was just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I always had a huge appreciation for that, but no training, never took classes, couldn't even draw very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had good penmanship because...
So the computer was perfect, really.
Computer was awesome.
So if it wasn't for this boss that had the computer and the modem that introduced you to it, you might not have ever gone on this graphic design.
That's entirely possible because, mm-hmm. yeah, he paid for the computer that I had, a pretty decent, like, IBM PC clone.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a computer that was more money than I could afford for my own. I was really into computers, so it's hard to say. I probably would have finagled another way to get a computer if I didn't have that one, but yeah, it was definitely helpful.
Yeah, so you started using Photoshop.
I learned Photoshop. I learned a program that's not around anymore called Freehand, but mm-hmm. it's Adobe Illustrator is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And then I learned a program that's also barely around anymore. First, I think I was using... I don't even remember if it's called Publisher or something like that.
Did you feel like you just naturally clicked with the language of computers?
Yeah. Like, I understood computers. I mm-hmm. understood the programs and everything.
Yeah.
But I was shit at design.
Uh-huh. But how did you get better?
Well, I just wanted the flyers to be better.
Right.
And so I would just take any criticism from any of my idiot band members.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of them had... valid things, or they'd show me stuff that other people had done, and so I got really good at looking at what other people had done and just like maybe pulling elements from this and that,
right,
and trying to see if I could replicate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I got really good at being able to see something and then try to make something similar to it,
give it that polish, that professional look.
Yeah, and stuff you don't even realize is professional, just in how you space things and how you use negative space and all these other things people don't think to do. It's like when you're in a band and you have a flyer, you just want to write all over it with all the stuff you can.
Yep. Yeah, it's very, it can be kind of an ethereal thing to understand.
Right. And then when you look back, it's like the coolest flyers would be either the punk rock ones, which, you know, look like a satanic decoupage incident. But those were cool. And then, yeah, I don't know, you look at some bands that were just more forward thinking, where it would be just so simple, just like a powerful image,
right,
and their band name, and like the club and the date would be in smaller letters, and it just looked slick, you know, it looked like what the pros were doing.
Right. They understood negative space, not crowding it.
Yeah.
Making it visually pleasing on the eye.
Not using 34 different fonts.
Right.
and then, you know, not using the stupid fonts that come with every computer.
Yeah, so you just learned this on your own.
Totally on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get other people to ask me, well, can you do one for the show for all the bands? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could throw you, I mean, I'd be lucky to get $20 or something like that. But then I started to, like, be able to do, like, album covers, and back then was very much cassette, and then early days of CD.
Yeah.
And so,
did you build this into a business?
Oh, not really, because I ended up getting a job at Thornton Media Services, which was, as I said, my first design job.
You ended up building that in that experience into getting a graphic design job. Huh?
I wormed my way in through another friend of mine who was also a band member that worked there, because I was like, I don't think I could do that. I mean, I know how to use the programs, but I don't know, like, I don't have the experience. He's like, just, you'll figure it out. It's not that hard.
Right.
But it actually was kind of hard.
But you learned on the job.
Totally learned on the job.
Mm-hmm. Paid learning.
Yeah. And fortunately, the bar was pretty low, because this is as pretty rock bottom as you could get in the design industry. This place was basically like a glorified Kinko's, you know what I mean? Without the self-serve copy.
So you're designing stuff that people bring in. They're like, I don't know what to do. Can you just design
something? I mean, it would be like print newsletters for the Los Angeles Flower Market. That was like a regular one I remember doing.
What happened next? What led to your, because you're quite the entrepreneur, what led you to start your own company? This episode is to be continued. Till next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.